Well, here I am again. I want to talk a little bit about going upriver. We're going to start up from Fort Kent now. We're going up along the river, up by St. Francis or San Francois, the Madawaska, in New Brunswick. We'll keep on upriver because this is the international boundary. Up by Connors, New Brunswick, and St. John on the American side, and we arrive at St. Francis, the St. Francis River runs into the St. John at St. Francis. And the international boundary leaves the St. John River at this point and goes up the St. Francis River. Now back in the days, they say that the international engineers that ran the boundary came to St. Francis and they went to Clare Hotel in St. Francis and they got slightly inebriated and they stayed there for 2 or 3 days because it was a stopping place and then with a goodly supply of alcoholic beverages, you know, back in those days, as they did today, as they do today, rather, they drank it in the summer to keep cool and in the winter to keep warm, and it was a good fly dope, so they claimed. In any event, they left after a few days in St. Francis and they went up the St. Francis River instead of the St. John, all the way to Escor. By the time they got to Escor, the story goes that they knew they were on the wrong river then. But it was a mighty long way to retrace their steps. So they just took a compass heading that they thought would bring them back over on the St. John where they should be. And they had to make a small correction before they got to the St. John, as you can see on the map. Now this is a story, and I will not vouch for the veracity of the story, but it is a story. But we're at St. Francis and we keep on up the St. John River and we come to the mouth of the Allegash River between St. Francis and Allegash. We have Lane's Rapid, Golden Rapid, and Negro Brook Rapid today. For years it was Nigger Brook Rapid. We go by Gardner Island and here we are at the mouth of the Allegash River. Now let us go up the Allegash River by canoe because we will pretend that those graveled roads that the logging interests have constructed were not there. But go by canoe. Up by the Misho Inn, 2 miles from the mouth of the river, then by Three Mile Island, on up and through the Cornish Sluice to Two Brook Rapids, 5 miles from the mouth. Now, Two Brook Rapids was one of the better known rapids on the river. Tom Gardner was a guide on the river. He was an excellent guide, an excellent canoeman. And of course, before the days of motors, they pushed their canoe up the river with a pole, what they called poling a canoe, and it was an art in itself. We had at those days what we called end-over-enders. That meant that a man could stand in his canoe with a canoe pole and pole the canoe up the river and sort of roll the pole end-over-end, first one end and then the other end down in the river, and work up quite a bit of speed. Tom Gardner, as I say, was a guide and an excellent canoeman. And in those days, when you had a party and you were guiding them up the river, after you had the evening meal, you also were supposed to have the capacity to furnish some entertainment for your party. Tom Gardner was a past master of telling stories. He'd tell a story about his father sowing buckwheat on the island in the spring when he couldn't get to the island. He'd have the ground all prepared from the fall before. And in the spring, when it was time to sow the buckwheat, he just went out on the bank with his double-barreled shotgun and his buckwheat, and he loaded both barrels and shot the buckwheat across on the island. Someone asked him how he got the buckwheat to spread, and Tom said that was no problem, he just waved the barrel when he was pulling the trigger. Then he was telling one evening at Kenneth's Depot, that was a stopping point when we had a party going up the river, he was telling the party about how fast he went up through Two Brook Rapids one time using the end-over-end method. And he said, well, I'll just tell you. I went up through there fast enough that I pulled that pole up out of the water, and there was a row of holes where that pole came up that drifted right back down through the rapids behind that canoe. Fred Hafford was along, one of the guides, and Fred laughed a little bit. Tom says, I don't suppose you believe that, do you, Fred? Fred says, the hell I don't, Tom. I came up a little bit behind you using the same holes. Well, that was the kind of stories that they told, you know. Tom let a member of his party out one time on a little bit of an island in the river, and he says, I'm going to go down here just a little way on the river and I'll come back and pick you up. fellow wanted to look for Fiddlehead Green. So Tom came back in a little while, and his party had wandered over on the other side of this little island. Tom hollered at him. He answered Tom, and he says, "Come over here, Tom. I'm on this side of the island." And Tom says, "Sorry, you'll have to come over here because I have a left-handed canoe." And then Tom would tell about working in the woods and going out from the camp out one winter and across Round Pond to the storage shed to get molasses for the camp, and forgot to take something to bring the molasses in. But he said that it was a very, very cold night and a very cold morning, and he had left long before sunup. So he said he found an old burlap sack and he just chopped some of the molasses out of that barrel and put the junks of molasses in the sack and threw it across his back and started back across the lake. He said, "When I got about a quarter of a mile from the other shore, I looked over my shoulder and I saw the sun coming," and he said, "I really went from there to the woods to get there before the sun got on that molasses." Of course, the stories that Tom told were, all of them had just enough in them that you could identify yourself with them. And the stories were appreciated too. You know, they in the lumber camps they had cooks, and they didn't call them bull cooks up here, they were cookies. And Tom said that at one certain camp that they had a cross-eyed cookie and they had to make two water holes, one for him to look in and the other one to dip the water out of. But we've come to Two Brook Rapids and we'll keep on up the river, and we come to Ghost Landing. This is a landing of logs where they saw a ghost at one time. It was Ghost Landing Bar. And then Spring Bank, where all the wonderful spring water is boiling right out of the bank. Then McGargle Rocks, where there is a great outcropping of ledges and rocks in the river, and Big Brook Deadwater, then the falls, the Allagash Falls, and the Michaud Farm, J.T. Michaud, great, great name on the river, J.T. Michaud. Built the Allagash Inn down at Allagash and built the buildings at the farm and cleared the land. Had electric lights there when most of the rest of Rooster County was running around with candles. Great man. J.T. And then Cunliffe's Depot. Cunliffe's Depot. We always called this Cunliffe's Depot. This was where Cunliffe had his headquarters when he was logging. It always had the name of Cunliffe's Depot. Then on up the river, I could name the brooks, but I'm not going to because we've gone by too many of them already. They say that up at the mouth of Ben Glaser book. There used to be a great fish hole at one time. Story has it too that back in those days, it is a fact that there was a family living up above where Long Lake Dam is now, what they call the Harvey Farm. And the U.S. mail used to be taken by canoe from the mouth of the river to the Harvey Farm. That's 42 miles. And whoever was running the mail would pole that canoe from the Allegash, from the mouth of the Allegash, up, carry around the falls, and on up to Harvey Farm in one day. And that was really a day's work for anyone. But up above Cunliffe Depot there is Kalki Deadwater, and then the Musquaquic Deadwater. The Musquaquic Stream puts in at the head of Musquaquic Deadwater. Round Pond Rips, and then Round Pond. Tom Gardner said he came into Round Pond one day, and right in the foot of the pond as he came into it, he looked up, and he could see this fellow sitting on a big rock, that rock's still there, shooting at something over in the cove. And he said the fellow ruined his rifle because the range was too far, and he strained the rifle and ruined it, trying to make it shoot too far. Willard Calbert built camps on Rocky Point in Round Pond. A beautiful place, Round Pond. A beautiful place, Rocky Point. Camps are still there. Willard's still here. Willard Jr. can tell about it better, much better than I can. Then on up the river, you can go up the back channel, as they call it, or the main channel. You come to the Pushanby Dam, up above Henderson Brook, the place where the water goes so fast that the old timers said that it was quite hard to get a boat of any kind up through there, because no matter how hard you pushed the boat, before you could get another hold with your pole, the boat was back where you started from. So they called it the Pushanby Dam. And then the Long Sioux. The Long Sioux. 2.5 miles of strong water. Then you begin to get up into Whitaker Brook Deadwater, and the next place you come to is Long Lake Dam, or where Long Lake Dam used to be, and I hope it will be again. They have reconstructed, the state has, the dam at Churchill, and the dam at Long Lake needs to be rebuilt and put back in operation to control the water in the Allegash Stream, in the lower Allegash. And it also is a great asset to the St. John River from Allegash down through Fort Kent and on down, because they can control the water to some extent, and it's needed much more now than it was then. For water control, not to drive logs anymore, but for water control. I think that that's about all that I want to say on this trip up the Allegash at this time. I don't know if it's of any interest. I'm going to get some comment on it, I think, before I continue. Reminiscing here, talking, but I'm going to leave the Allegash and I'm going to make quite a hop now. I mentioned Connors, New Brunswick. My name is Connors, of course, James Connors. My great uncle, Bob, or Robert Connors, came from Camelton, as did his brothers. And they came to Connors, New Brunswick, and he built a mill there, and he carried on a logging operation. He built quite a few buildings there. One of them is standing. There's the old store standing also. And the old Connors house is there. It's a kind of a show place, and Romeo Barnier owns it right now. And he and his wife, Susan, have done a wonderful job in preserving the house. And they welcome visitors to look the house over, anyone that might be interested. The first, I believe, Protestant church in the valley could well have been built there at Connors. It's still standing. It's a small church. My grandfather is buried there. My great-grandfather was buried in Camelton in a cemetery that the Fraser Paper Company keeps up, located on the grounds that their paper mill is constructed on. And they've done a wonderful job of preserving the old cemetery there. And we have letters that he wrote to the family after they came to Connors, New Brunswick. And he was lonesome at that time and was wishing that some of them would go back and visit him. Those letters were dated 1781. He died in 1784. And the church at Connors was built before that, of course. And my father wasn't even born at that time. He was born, when the church was built, he was born in 1872. The church was built quite a few years before that. Just when, I do not know. I should, but I just do not. But they built the mill at Connors, New Brunswick, and because he built the mill there, it was instrumental in having the railroad run through to Connors, New Brunswick, the Temiscuata. Undoubtedly a great many people remember the Temiscuata Railroad, from Edmundston to Connors, New Brunswick. It's been discontinued for a great many years now, but it certainly was the first railroad in the area. He carried on logging operations on the St. Francis River, St. John River, Little River and on the Machias rivers, both of them, the Little Machias and the Big Machias down in the Ashland area. Today, the people who live in Connors are, for the most part, people of French descent. However, at that time, there were a great many English, but there were French people, too, also. The Blairs and the Dominics, Chandras, and there was Thomases, and as well as the Connors, and the McDonalds, and the Tobins. These people, for the most part, have left that area. There are a few of them left. I believe Donald Taggett lives there now. John Taggett, a cousin of his. But most of them have gone, the Tobins have all gone, the McDonalds. There were Swedes there too by the name of Stoddy and Larsons. Joneses, the old George Jones. The house is still there, I believe. A family by the name of O'Leary lives in it now. That was the story of Connors, New Brunswick, as I know it. I think that's all.